actually.
One.
I'll get you that. All right, you're up.
All right, conservation. This is, I guess, the third to last element that we are discussing as part of this comp plan, so we have a little light at the end of our tunnel. The agenda for today, we'll provide an overview of what the element is, maybe discuss what was in the previous 2008 plan, and then go through the goals, objectives, and strategies that were prepared in concert with the Planning and Zoning Commission. So the element provides an overview of what lands in the county are protected and what natural resources exist. It describes county development regulations and conservation initiatives. It lists other major plans and conservation initiatives, and it has its goals, objectives, and strategies. There are protected lands and natural resources throughout the county. These include federal and state lands, including agricultural land preservation areas and forest land preservation areas. There is private preserved land, which is created through the Sussex County Land Trust, the Delaware Wildlands, Ducks Unlimited, and the Nature Conservancy, other organizations as well. And then water resources, such as surface waters, groundwater, wetlands, and floodplains, and then also air. For current agricultural preservation, the Delaware Ag Lands Preservation has ag preservation easements. These are created through the purchase of development rights from landowners, and it imposes a permanent agricultural conservation easement on that land. There are also ag preservation districts, and these are more voluntary, where landowners agree to continue to use their land for ag for at least 10 years. We're mentioning the Delaware Young Farmers Loan Program as well. That helps young farmers buy land while protecting it from future development. So these are all tools that are available right now for ag preservation. Incentives for ag preservation include fee simple purchase. Farms are purchased outright from willing sellers, permanently preserving that land for agricultural use, and resold or leased with deed restrictions. This is a pretty good way of ensuring that that land remains in agricultural for the future. It primarily involves a conservation organization, state, county, or local government working with that willing landowner. Benefits mean that it permanently protects that land. Public access if purchased by public entity or private group using public funds can also be a way of ensuring that publicly purchased lands is available to the public and increases adjoining property values. The limitations include it's very costly for the recipient to purchase that land. The land may be taken off the tax rolls as well, so you're losing that tax revenue. Counties that use this tool include the Washington County in Wisconsin, as well as Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Up in Pennsylvania, they have a bond to provide financial assistance to municipalities for fee simple purchase.
Do you think they work? I mean, are you, you're highlighting these? Do you are you pointing to these as success stories?
When I was taking a planning exam, one of the test questions was, how do you permanently, you know, preserve the character of a parcel? And it was through fee simple purchase. That was one of the multiple choice question answers. As the best way.
Yes, it is.
It takes control of that away from everyone else. It's kind of very clean, and you have setting up expectations.
Okay. I agree.
All right.
How about the benefits are, George?
So we can maybe include potential strategy or objective in applying this tool.
Mm-hmm.
These are the preservation areas and protected lands throughout the county. We went through a little bit of this last week when we were going through our constraints mapping. County development regulations and conservation initiatives include the zoning ordinance and subdivision code contains numerous special regulations designed to protect environmental resources. This includes the ESDA overlay zone. We don't expect that changing as part of our coastal areas land use classification. It's just becoming more of a generic land use as it would work within the document, similar to the other land use classifications, with some additional restrictions applied to it. subdivision regulations that require forested buffers, as well as minimum common open space and a special design review by county-appointed technical advisory committee.
Now, we don't, these examples, we don't have them currently, right?
Well, the overlay zone is there.
Okay, but like on regulations restricting building activity within the 100-year floodplain, do we have restrictions in Sussex County on that, Janelle?
Are you kidding? Sure we got it.
The restrictions would be they'd have to comply with the floodplain regulations, and we've adopted in 2015,
okay,
so.
Right, you just have to build higher or something.
You'd have to build in compliance with the floodplain regulations.
Right.
So you can't build in the floodplain. You have to, if you're going to build, you have to be elevated.
Well, you know, you can build in the floodplain.
Yes,
you just have to be higher, right?
Higher than.
We don't restrict building activity within.
The word, yeah.
We regulate it within, but we're not restricting.
It's restricting certain activities, not necessarily restricting the building within the flood zone.
I don't think it restricts any activity that we do. The only, I mean, the elevation is not an activity.
Well, I guess we could change the language to say, I mean, you're not building in low areas with, you know, kind of a low footprint in the building area. So we can change the word activity to mean more of a methodology.
Yeah, I mean, if I read that, I would think that maybe there are some restrictions in this county within the 100-year floodplain other than what the, I guess, is it the Army Corps or EP, who is it?
It's FEMA.
FEMA requires. Mm-hmm. And that's not a county regulation. The county's not restricting anything.
Well, the county.
FEMA.
FEMA made the county adopt those regulations that say,
okay,
you know,
but,
what your
okay, but,
base flood elevations are.
I don't know. I just read that as saying it looks like we do. We are concerned. And in reality, we are.
And activity.
We run sewer district. We run sewer lines in 100-year floodplains. We do everything.
Activity could also refer to intensity of uses as well.
Okay.
So I mean.
Yeah, but put my realtor hat on. I mean, 100-year plan, 500-year plan, really, that's kind of just all it really does, or at least what it has been done in the past, is I would think is two things. Number one, it just kind of puts the public on notice that there's a potential flooding issue here at this parcel, right? That's kind of a statement. You are on notice. If you build here, this is what could happen.
That's correct. I mean,
okay.
You're essentially delineating an area that's at higher risk than another area.
Exactly. And so I think that's number one. Then number two, obviously, that shifts the category as far as the insurance rates, as we all know. And you're in a different classification, and you typically are required to get flood insurance and other things because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So typically, that's what it's done.
But none of those are county. We still don't restrict insurance companies, all these other things are outside entities that are restricting.
Well,
the county's
sort of
not doing anything.
Indirectly we do, because we had to adopt that ordinance that talked about how you build structures. Remember, because there was the free board and everything else with that we dealt with, what,
I understand all that. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm glad you joined in.
Show me something the county's done, and we haven't really done anything. We just have taken, you know, like,
what would
like
you,
FEMA.
What would you have in mind? I mean, it's,
no, I don't know.
In a serious note, I don't know.
I'm just saying, the regulations restricting, we're not restricting, we don't have any regulations restricting building activity within the 100-year floodplain.
I would say right now the way to word that would be that we do have regulations governing building activity.
Or modifying.
Maybe that's a better way to say it.
Or modifying.
We're looking at what's happening now. It's probably.
Again, this is just an example of things that could be done. So
okay,
if we
okay.
want to look at that, if there's a strategy or goal
okay.
or something.
Okay, that's a.
This is just an example of something that can
something
be done.
Something could be done. In
yes.
other words, not implying something we do currently. Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Except for the first one, that does exist.
Right.
Yes.
Does the state overrule us? Doesn't the federal government overrule the state? So why? How are we getting around this?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, maybe because you're all over your head, George. I'm sorry.
No, you're not in my head. You're under my head. No, that's okay.
Talk about that last one. Conservation zones are established.
No idea what you're talking
about. I can read that for you. The conservation zones are established.
I don't know what they mean.
Leeward from the mean high water line of tidal bodies and regulate lot size for parcels proposing individual on-site septic and wells. So the first part of that statement talks about moving it to that area. The highest point that water would go, and having that be the beginning of where that lot line would be.
So that would be, but we currently do that now. There's no lot lines in a wetlands. Is that what that example, right? Is that correct now?
So what this is referencing is the county's conservation zone, which says if you are within 1,000 feet of land area that was identified in the 1988 comp plan or the 1990 plan, then, you know, lands from the mean high water line or adjacent floodplains of tidal water bodies, rivers, or their major tributaries, whichever is greater, you have different lot sizes, different road frontage requirements, and those could change based on if you're on septic or sewer.
Right.
So that's...
We currently have that?
We currently have that.
Yeah. You have to, what is it, 1 acre minimum?
It's a 1 acre minimum, and it's 150 feet of road frontage with septic. Your lot size can come down if you're on sewer, but you still have to have 150 feet of road frontage.
Well, that's standard, but your lot size can just come down to whatever the zone.
Correct.
Yeah,
your
well,
zoning, so if your MR and it's 10,000 square feet, you can do a 10,000 square foot lot
sewer, doesn't matter.
With sewer, but you still have to have 150 feet of road frontage if you fall into this classification. And that's if you actually are fronting on a water body.
I would say that most of our lands in tidal areas are provided by sewer today.
That's correct.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So
this doesn't have much impact on coastal Sussex County. It'll have more of an impact on the western side around the
But you don't have any tidal over there.
Yeah, well, I guess the Manicoke River. Yeah. Manicoke's kind of tidal.
And honestly, the way the code is written now is, if it's not a strategy, maybe it could be, because it's a little...
old?
It's a little old, but it also references a 1988 plan, which has a very static map that is very difficult to read, that also references a 1990 plan, which is the west side, which references the 88 plan, which is the east side. So it gets a little confusing rather quickly.
Is one of the goals, or could one of the goals be to clean that up?
Could be. Could be a strategy.
Yeah, bring everything up to one plan, one strategy. Forget all referencing these other older maps. It makes no sense to do that.
Tidal bodies only goes to a dam.
And I can tell you, this has actually come into play within the last 6 months for a property that wanted to subdivide, and it was on the water, it was on septic, and, you know, how do they address the lot size and the lot width?
I think we ought to look at that.
Okay. Yeah, we'll add a strategy. We can bring that back for discussion. Any other comments, questions?
Okay.
We thought we'd take a little bit of time today to talk about the difference between buffers and setbacks. So to begin, just a quick overview of what buffers are. Buffers are natural areas between land uses and wetlands or water bodies that intercept pollutants and manage other environmental concerns. There are different types of buffers. Riparian buffers include those transition areas between the water and land. Riparian buffers also link terrestrial upland ecosystems to streams, rivers, lakes, and wetland ecosystems. These buffers can be strips of grassy land leading to a water's edge or thickly forested areas that are streamside. And the important function of these riparian buffers include protecting and improving water quality, protecting and improving wildlife habitat and biodiversity, preserving floodplains and wetlands, protecting against erosion, preserving stream characteristics, and providing recreation and aesthetic value.
On your other one, just on that, just to be picky, like the buffers can be strips of grassy lands to the water's edge or thickly forested. Obviously, they could be somewhere in between, right? I mean, does that...
Correct.
I don't know if that wording means it's either or, but...
No, it doesn't, but we can clarify. Agricultural buffers are those that are more man-made. These are strategically placed in the agricultural landscape and can effectively mitigate the movement of sediments, nutrients, and pesticides within farm fields and from the farm fields, as well as improve air and water quality.
We don't have any of those currently, do we?
Buffers?
Yes.
Yeah, there's a 50-foot...
Give me an example.
There's
a 50-foot buffer from... If you're going to build a new subdivision and there's active farm next door, you have a 50-foot buffer that that either you put into open space or you cannot build within because of the agricultural use next door.
I understand that buffer, but to mitigate the movement of sediment, nutrients, and pesticides from farm fields into to improve water quality, that's not reflecting a buffer next to a agricultural ditch or a waterway. We have no buffers against those. We only have buffers against uses.
But we do, George.
Let me...
George finished the same.
Isn't that correct?
No, it's not.
We have regulations for agriculture from...
I know that George had it.
The residential uses. There are tax ditch right-of-ways along
tax
ditches.
Okay, that's not a county...
No, to answer your question...
That is not our...
We do not have
just a straight agricultural buffer aside from those associated with development.
Correct.
We don't have any agricultural
buffers. Farm right up to the stream.
We have no agricultural buffers that do protect sediment, nutrients, pesticides, and that help improve water quality. We don't have
that
true today.
I take it back.
We don't regulate that.
We don't do that.
Don't regulate that.
Okay, but we have it in our plan. I'm wondering, is this implying we should do this? Or what is this implying?
This is not in the plan,
no,
sir.
This is just an
I was
just an
describing
example.
An example of what ag buffers can do as opposed to what setbacks are. We discussed riparian buffers on the previous slide, and this is an example
Is there any recommendation to do this?
That's up to council.
Okay, but I'm, like I say, as we go through these real fast, if somebody doesn't point out, a lot of this council probably thought we already do that because the way it's read. I think there needs to be pointed out each time we go through these.
Yep.
We don't do this currently. Do you want to do this?
Yeah, sure.
This is just information right now.
That's good.
Kind of.
I mean, if I'm going through this
background exercise,
I want to get some value.
When we get to the goals, objectives, and strategies, we can then discuss if that language is suitable or if you'd want to include these kinds of things.
Okay. And, when we actually do something that's up here on the screen, or we do not do it, so that we all are informed.
Okay? Yes, sir.
So there's no gray area or confusion.
Are you all done?
I am done, sir.
Now, please give Mr. Wilson the floor.
I won't say a word.
Sam?
I'll make a lot of faces.
George,
you want to comment?
George, isn't it true that if you turn this over to soil conservation and let them make the decisions, how come they're not capable of doing this job?
I'm not allowed to talk.
That's right.
The president said I can't talk.
Soil conservation handles this. I don't know why we're even mucking in this.
Well, I'm not suggesting we muck in it, sir.
I think we ought to just let it go.
Okay.
Talk about buffers.
There were questions that had come up in the previous meetings about the difference between buffers and setbacks. I'm just describing what buffers are, and I'm about to describe what setbacks are.
I find that most people are experts in farming. They never farmed in their life.
Okay.
So that's experts right there. The ones never done it.
Right.
They know all about it. They moved in the state, and they know a whole lot more than we ever know. I don't even know how we get by feeding them.
Now then, are you all done?
I'm going to let George have it.
We're done with this. Move right along.
There's no follow-up there.
Mike, you have to be the buffer.
Yeah, I'm the buffer. Hey,
So what's a setback, and how is that different than a buffer?
And the setback.
Yeah.
So a setback is the distance which a building or other structure is set back from a street or road. It can also be a setback from a river or stream, a shore or a floodplain, or a place which is deemed of need of protection. Setbacks can influence the perception of a streetscape and the experience along that street. The current Sussex County setback regulations include construction setbacks from primary coastal dunes, building setbacks from tidal waters and tidal wetlands, and combined highway corridor overlay zoning districts that have building setbacks, landscaping, and other regulations enforced to enhance roadside aesthetics.
So
hey. Mr. Burton, we don't do this.
When you describe a setback, you are only talking about from a construction point. It would be from the building, a physical construction, the other way.
A different way to look at it would be to say, if I'm designing a community, and we're going to have a community design chapter discussion soon, the setback is part of that community design. You're determining from an aesthetic perspective how things are going to be placed on the land and within the building envelope.
On the lot.
Right.
Okay, so a setback.
Or a strip of lots, like along a roadway corridor or between different developments. how those setbacks are designed and how they function.
Okay.
Mr. Cole, you have anything?
I will just say this again, in plotted and recorded lots in this county today, there is no setbacks required from coastal dunes, tidal waters, tidal wetlands, or any of that stuff. For instance, I'll use my example where I live. I have frontage, road frontage. I have to be 30 feet off my front road, but I only have to be 10 feet off my rear setback line. And part of my setback is actually underwater nowadays. But the county, if I went into the county, they would look at my survey, even though it was out in the water, and allow the 10 feet to come from that point in the water in. So I theoretically could build right on the water. And we had to kind of Silver Lake. I think there's some house on Silver Lake or different things because we don't address this at all. So, and that was part of the problem or our scorched earth thing. When we look at it, nobody looked at what was behind at the rear property line. So anyway, we're not doing this.
Because in our code, we look at the property survey, right? Is that what you're saying, George?
Right, we don't have any requirement to say that is that survey abutting any waterway, any title, any of this stuff. So they will just use the rear property line and say you just have to be 10 feet off of that. Doesn't matter what's there currently, is how we address it.
Is that right?
Right, Janelle?
So the way it has always been interpreted is, so we have lots that say the back half is in the lagoon that you could count that last 10 feet of your, because the property line goes into the water, that last 10 feet is, that's where your setback would be from, so you could actually build onto the edge of that. That has been the historic way of looking at the setbacks.
Which is that good? No. Should we address that? Yes. So I guess something in this land use plan ought to determine these areas or something.
That's an interpretation. I'm asking, is there a separate, different building setback from tidal or non-tidal wetland waters listed here as compared to something out in the middle of a farm field?
No.
It's 10 feet. Because, again, if we have tidal water bodies, there's a 10-foot buffer that you have to have, and then your property line can start, and then you'd have your normal setback from your property line, but if there's tidal water, tidal wetlands or tidal water bodies, you have a 50-foot buffer, and then your property line starts, and then your setbacks are from your property line.
If your property line is in the wetlands, you can build in the wetlands if you can get a permit to build there.
If you can get a permit from DENREC and the Army Corps of Engineers, yes.
The difference is...
Or build right on the edge, which again isn't very... I mean, with all the runoff, it comes off a house or whatever, you know, it's...
The difference is what Mr. Cole's talking about. There's a couple different categories.
You don't have a 50-foot buffer around tidal wetland?
We do.
Tidal, we do.
Yeah.
But
so you can't build in that buffer, can you?
But here's the situation, though, because there's, under the code, if you were plotted prior to 1991, I think it is...
You're exempt.
Right. And so that's the situation Mr. Cole's talking about in a lot of places throughout Sussex County. After 1991, and again, I think that's the date, then there's that 50-foot buffer that Janelle just talked about, and that gets you into the situation that she's in. But in Mr. Cole's case, in all sorts of lots all over the place.
How about redevelopment? So if I wanted to redevelop, right now I'm 40 or 50 feet off the water. Yeah. If I wanted to redevelop these parcels that are, again, have impacts, I could still go in and move my house right on the edge.
As long as
you
don't, you know, replot the lots.
The lot was existing prior to the code.
Because I know down in Accomack County, even on existing parcels, you can't change the footprint. In other words, you buy an older property, want to redevelop it. If your footprint is 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet, whatever it is, you've got to stay within that footprint. They don't allow you to encroach closer to the waterways. They allow you to go, you know, move further from it, but they don't allow you to get closer. So anyway, we don't do much in the way of protection here, is my point.
And I don't control that section, George.
Okay.
She's not in Accomack County.
I understand. That's true, Sam.
By the way, Janelle, I want to ask you this question. Incorporated towns, you don't control, correct?
Correct. We have no jurisdiction inside the town limits.
I know a house is built right on the ditch here, right here in this town. So we have no controls. We're out of control on that.
No controls for properties located within towns or cities.
Incorporated areas, right?
Correct.
Does
they have their own rules and regulations.
Right. So when you see houses built up close to the ditches, we better take a second look at it and say, is it really in the county or is it not in the county?
I know. Well, we all know if it's in the town limits or not.
George, I can go show you a house right now built almost right on the very edge of the ditch.
Okay.
The corner comes right to it.
Okay.
I said somebody being back to the ditch force yard. I said, well, you are not built so darn close to it.
Is it considered waterfront?
Geez, you have a
it's
question?
It's back. Yeah. It's on the back part of the house, Rob.
Wait, I'm in control. Mike's gone. Thank you, Mr. Wilson. John?
Wait.
Mr. Burr's got a question.
How does bulkheading affect this?
So we're talking about bulk restrictions?
No, bulkhead.
No, bulkhead.
You know, like you build a bulkhead along your lot.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah. And can I ask a question along those lines? How do you measure these buffers? You said if there is a buffer because of the wetlands or the tidal waterways, how do you measure where that 50 feet is, and then from that 50 foot you start your 10 foot measurement?
So typically on a subdivision, like if you've got tidal wetlands, they'll be designated and they're shown on a plan, and then they'll show the 50 foot buffer from them.
Mm-hmm.
And then typically what happens is that the property lines are usually right on that 50 foot buffer. So then we know the property line and the buffer line typically are the same line. So then we know where you can start your 10 feet because you've plotted out your personal, the lots.
So they get on their site plan a wetland delineation, and that's where your measurement is calculated?
Correct.
Okay.
Wetland delineations are a requirement
for
subdivisions and site plans.
And the 50 foot we're referencing is county's measurement today?
The county from tidal.
Okay.
And, what is it if it's non-tidal?
There is no setback. There's no buffer. There's no setback from non-tidal wetlands and water bodies. You can build, right now, to today's code, you can build to the edge of non-tidal water bodies and wetlands.
And to your reference on bulkheading, if you have a piece of ground and you want, and you're property line goes into wetlands or water, whatever, you've got to get a permit from DNREC, and they will make you, they won't allow you to go in and recapture wetlands and fill them. They'll come back to wherever the erosion is or wherever, you know, you're up, where the upland starts. So that they establish that through their permit process.
Okay, so are you going to bring us back suggestions and
yes.
thoughts on how to look at both tidal and non-tidal wetlands as far as it relates to setbacks and buffers?
Yes, we can do that.
I would just say that to tag along with that, the commission talked about that, and they struggled a little bit with the non-tidal wetlands because they're sort of not officially, but like two categories of that. You know, so it's one thing if a stream, for example, is a non-tidal wetland. You know, okay, you can kind of wrap your head around a buffer from that. But, you know, there's also isolated wetlands that'll just show up in the middle of a field or whatever that are small in nature. And, you know, and I will tell you that the commission had concerns about those particularly, buffers in general, but those particularly because they just can pop up everywhere and they're not part of a tidal anything or a stream that moves, you know, they're just sort of pocket wetlands that
they're not wetlands or bottomlands, right?
Is there a way to define them and distinguish them?
Yeah. Should be.
Is there? I don't know.
You know,
I know what you're talking about. You're talking about a farm field, you've got a hole, it's got cattails coming out of it.
Right. Right. And should I have 50 feet around that versus around a stream?
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Good point.
Yeah.
There are federal wetlands that are isolated. So you could reference isolated wetlands and have a, I guess I'm sure there's a definition with Department of Natural Resources.
Yeah, so there was a lot of discussion of planning and zoning about these kind of pop-up pocket wetlands and how they are being recognized. And I think recently we had a conversation about if you're going to develop that lot, you know, are density calculations involved with or without that? Is part of the community design element. So our next slide actually kind of asks this question. One of the things that I'm going to suggest is that we not talk about it as part of our community design element. I think it is more of a conservation decision, because the determination of what can be developed on land would only happen after you defined what the developable area is. And then you can do your community design approach, because then you're focusing on what is being developed only. So for this chapter, if we're going to talk about further defining what constitutes a wetland and how it's going to be used for whether or not it's part of wet density calculations, it would be more appropriate to talk about it as part of conservation and have that established so that when you get to community design, you're focusing only on the areas that are available for development.
But don't you need to understand what your buffers are to, so that's why you're saying stay in this chapter. So
yes.
You take a Burton's pond, right? That's not tidal, right? So then, and it's freshwater, so that's no setback, right? Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
So there's zero setback from that wetlands, and what you're saying is let's define what the buffers are, should be around the wetlands.
Not necessarily buffers, but define what constitutes a wetland, whether it's freshwater or a pocket or something that exists in a low area on a field. If somebody's looking to sell that parcel and they're kind of doing a density calculation for how much they can build on that area of land, the duration of the wet area, how large it is, how wet it is, all of that should be a factor that we can maybe put in the conservation chapter to say this is a strategy for further defining that, so when someone goes to sell a certain parcel, they kind of know what they're getting into.
Yeah, but I agree with that.
And then if there is no setback, then when you are looking at the remaining area of the parcel that is okay for development, you would then know where your building areas are. And if it's up to the edge of that wetland, then that's what that would include.
Okay, I mean, I agree. So I got that one, but so one is buildable acres, and the other one is buffers around wetlands. So
right.
It's a double deal that reverts
no
back
whammy.
To density.
Correct. Because that if there is a buffer that would be applied in addition to the identification of that wetland area, then that would reduce the amount of land that could be developed, yes.
Okay.
I'm also, just go back to, we were talking about isolated wetlands. I think we got the impression that isolated wetlands are very small little pockets and things. Many times it's
not necessarily.
It's majority of the parcel is isolated wetlands. And I'll guarantee when developers are purchasing parcels of ground that are mostly wetlands or a portion of wetlands, they take that into consideration on the, what they're paying for this stuff. So we should address what is a developable land in Sussex County and what is not. And we got to figure out this wetland thing. And so isolated wetlands might be hard to separate off. Just a point.
I think the confusing word there is isolation, you know?
Maybe do, isolated wetlands under a certain size, you know, but I don't know.
Well, I guess it's sort of the way the discussion's going, it applies. What I think you all are talking about is two different things, is whether like smaller isolated wetlands should require buffers on the one hand, that's one thing, and then whether all wetlands should be used or not used to calculate density, you know, because you may not have a buffer around, you know, a quarter acre or smaller mm-hmm. pocket wetland, and that's fine, but what I think maybe you're talking about is whether or not that quarter acre wetland can be used to calculate density. And that's a different question.
Or a 10 acre.
Yeah, right. Right,
or,
either way.
You know, we just saw one there down by the Maryland border, which only out of 70 acres, only 18 acres was buildable. And we've got a density of that on that 18 acres, which is pretty high. Because they calculated the balance and jammed it all of it.
We've not voted on that one yet.
Correct. I didn't go very far on it. I didn't say anything. I just pointing out as an example.
Usually after a big rain.
I think recommendations are we need.
Got a lot of
okay.
After a big rain.
All right.
He's so smart.
If you listen a little bit, George, you'd be a lot smarter.
So moving along, open space. So DENREC defines this as open spaces and natural places such as forests, waterways, parks, greenways, wetlands, and otherwise undeveloped lands. These open spaces support all of the living things that inhabit them, including the economy and people of Delaware. We talked a little bit about this in the recreation open space chapter, but it's important to note the conservation and ecological benefits.
But when we use the word open space, that's what we're referring to. And all you're looking at a community, and they say, I got 50% open space. That's what they're referring to.
It's that undeveloped land. And you have to be careful that, as we talked in the previous meeting on our future land use chapter, that you're not looking at like a detention basin and the area surrounding that basin as being, you know, your open space. You want it to have a value that would allow for it to be either appreciated as a view shed or enjoyed from a recreational perspective, whatever that looks like. So yes, this is trying to define it as forests, waterways, parks, greenways, etc., as a way of saying this is what open space means.
But our code doesn't do that.
So that's a different interpretation than what we're under today.
Our code does define open space, and I'm not going to read it, but it gives a definition that's
base long.
Yeah, it's somewhat similar to that, but what it does in addition to that is it goes on and says that here's a list of 10 or 11 uses that are permitted in open space, and here's things that are not permitted in open space. But it does have, we do define it pretty clearly.
But not very well.
Well, we define it well. It's whether you think
you
it's
like
regulated
the
well.
Right. Okay, yeah. I got you. Okay. Because, like he's saying, parking lots, read off a few of them just to give us
a taste of it. Here's what can't go in open space. Land area included within designated lot lines, building footprints, predominantly impervious surfaces such as street rights-of-way, sidewalks, parking and loading areas, utility facilities, including building plants, equipment for treatment or pumping, lagoons, rapid infiltration basins, and that sort of thing. What's allowed is recreational facilities, including swimming pools, game courts, that sort of things, ponds, buffers, areas protected by easements, areas providing scenic vistas, sidewalks not located within streets or right-of-ways. So those would kind of be like, you know, paths through the open space. Spray irrigation areas, tidal and non-tidal wetlands, and stormwater management facilities.
That's it. Spray is open space?
Spray irrigation areas are open space, not including areas occupied by rapid infiltration basins. So, yeah, you could have spray irrigation and have that count toward your open space.
I just think we get lulled to sleep when somebody says, I got 56% open space, and it's stormwater management, and it's 20 feet around the development that's a required buffer, and the sidewalks. I think we ought to say this is really open space, and this is the percentage of it, and this is other land, and this is the percentage of that, so that you know what you're getting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to give you an example of that, if you have, we see it frequently, well, you all do too, on a single family condominium project, which is a conditional use where there's not individual lots, there's just building footprints. So there's most times the high percentage of open space that appears in that plan, because anything that's not covered by the footprint of the building is considered open space. So if you're driving through it, you would think somebody's front yard visually is their front yard. That's actually counted towards open space, you know, because every inch of ground is open space.
Yours would probably call it open space, wouldn't it?
And you probably would. Yeah.
And we permit that. That's right now, in the definition,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe we need to revisit the definition of open space, obviously, and have a consensus of what that means. I don't know. As we move forward.
Okay.
Yeah, all right.
So other major plans and conservation initiatives in the state and the county. We look at federal, state, county, municipal, and private parties working together to separately to help and preserve Sussex County natural environment. These examples include the Sussex County Land Trust, the Inland Bays Preservation, Delaware Bay Estuary Project, and the Living Shorelines Program. There's an update to a conservation element for beach preservation. It's a section placed within 5.4.5 other state initiatives. And the text was provided to us by DENRAC, so we're going to be talking about that when we get to that point of the chapter. All right, so what were the old 2008 goals? The first one is referencing land preservation. Back in 08, we wanted to continue working with the state to identify opportunities for the state to acquire additional lands in Sussex County designated as natural areas. Wanted to encourage more interested farmers to enroll in the ag preservation districts as a prerequisite for having the state purchase farmland development rights. Want to continue working with the Sussex County Land Trust to use funds collected from local developers and funds leveraged from other sources to preserve more land through conservation easements and fee simple acquisition. Wanted to adopt a locally formulated TDR program so that sector developers could take a larger role in funding the permanent preservation of open space. Wanted to strengthen county development regulations to ensure that open space dedicated by developers contains enough contiguous legitimate open space to facilitate environmental protection or passive recreation. And then establish future public service areas, sewer service areas to help preserve open space by promoting orderly growth rather than unplanned sprawl. Some of these are carried over into the new plan.
Can I ask you a question? Just on, this isn't John so much. With the one about encouraging more interested farmers to enroll in ag preservation, has there been a currently, because this is 08, is there currently a shortage of people wanting to enroll in ag preservation, or is there
shortage of money?
Shortage of money. That's what. Yeah. It's just a
they question. All want free money.
There's a strong interest.
That's what I thought. Yeah, that's why I was wondering if that even applied anymore. Okay. Thanks.
And on land preservation, should we distinguish between agriculture maybe and just, you know, undeveloped land type of lands, as opposed to maybe it appears that we're merging under land preservation ag and natural areas. I think there's a big difference personally. So is that what this is doing, John?
Well, from an ag perspective, you're taking kind of an active role in your land preservation activities. By looking at what is happening on the ground and what agricultural activities could affect whether land is preserved or it's being used. Alternatively, then you're looking at your natural areas as kind of like setting those boundaries of what would be preserved from a natural perspective. So we would include both when we want to talk about land preservation. It's not just one or the other.
Okay. I'm just wondering if they should be separated.
They are on the maps, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're just talking about them on the same slide, but they're both being used to preserve land.
And on the last one, bullet there, establish future sewer service areas that will help preserve open space by promoting orderly growth rather than unplanned sprawl. Again, how would we do that?
I think, Mr.
We don't do that at all.
Yeah, no, but I think that one sort of, when the county went back and looked at its sewer service areas, because that was within the past plan, I think that was the idea, so that there was coordination with county sewer versus private central sewer providers versus placing, you know, sort of localized central sewer out in the middle of nowhere. So I think we did that, to some extent. It's more about sewer planning than development, I would say.
I just wondering how we do preserve open space with what you just said. I don't know if we're doing any preserving of open space through that program.
I circled that one as a concern for the upcoming plan because we certainly have planning areas for our sewer service, but a lot of that is driven by other
requests,
just other factors, quite frankly. And some of which it becomes a matter of how much we can actually build in time to get the sewer in the ground. You know, it takes a lot of time to get that done and in place for the construction of the development to come after.
You don't like this strategy or what?
You will hear a lot of engineers say that sewer should not drive development.
And I know we had Mr. Medlars spend a lot of time with us at planning and zoning, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I'm fairly confident he would say that His sewer plans have nothing to do with open space.
Nothing.
Or land use.
Exactly, I know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, currently we you know, react, right, to the needs and to the requests. This is suggesting more proactive.
We don't necessarily react in all instances.
To the demand.
But some we do, yes.
But I mean, at the same time, we also don't want to go out and do it because obviously that increases the property values, and we've talked about that. We don't want to...
No, we don't run lines. We respond to requests.
Right. That's what I'm saying. We react.
I think the new tier system, if it goes through, will actually help promote the orderly growth. It just, I think the concern here is it's saying that it'll preserve open space.
And that really doesn't.
But the new tier program that Mr. Medlars has proposed would definitely help promote orderly growth and try to help with sprawl. So that there's maybe a tweak to that to address that.
Todd, are you suggesting we eliminate that one or reword it so it doesn't change it?
We're just reviewing the 2008 goals, objectives, and strategies. We're going to get to today's plan.
Okay, I'm sorry.
We have a circle.
It's what you approved 10 years ago.
Don't point that finger at me.
All right. Also in 2008, we looked at resource protection strategies. This included adopting zoning regulations that mandate an appropriate buffer between buffer distance between non-tidal wetlands and developments, supporting the Center for Inland Bays and other conservation groups in their efforts to educate more people about the necessity of protecting wetlands, encourage the state and tributary action teams to finish formulating pollution control strategies for the inland bays, the Nanticoke River, and the Broadkill Creek, and to focus on implementing these strategies, continue to assess the potential value of including stream setback regulation and water pollution control plans for the inland bays and other local water bodies, amend appropriate sections of Sussex County zoning and subdivision codes to encourage more green stormwater management techniques as an alternative to traditional detention basins, and amending appropriate sections of Sussex County zoning and subdivision codes to add requirements that would help protect critical wildlife habitat. This continues to raise landowners' awareness about myriad financial incentives the state offers to protect and better manage forest land, wetlands, wildlife habitat, and farmland, adopt a wellhead protection ordinance with commonly accepted setback standards for protecting groundwater recharge areas, prioritizing the provision of public sewer to areas with concentrations of failed or potentially failing septic systems in order to protect surface water and groundwater, provide more public education about how to properly construct and operate on-site septic systems. In the ESDA, delete all wetland areas from the gross lot size calculation used as a basis for determining allowable site density, and evaluating the county's development regulations to ensure that maximum building coverage regulations reflect appropriate concern for reducing stormwater and promoting on-site recharge. Encourage better nutrient management techniques, improved erosion control techniques, the installation of fences to keep livestock out of waterways, and other best management practices on local farms, strengthen county development regulations that mandate forested buffers between new residential areas and contiguous ag uses, continue working with the state and local landowners to help sustain and protect well-managed working forest lands through the Forest Legacy Program and related initiatives. The county understands that working forests are not necessarily managed for biodiversity or protection of critical natural habitat. However, the county recognizes the value of conserving these areas in accordance with approved woodlot management practices.
They've been doing it for 20 years.
All right.
At least.
So that completes an overview of the goals and strategies that were contained in the 08 plan. So for the 2018 plan, we have four goals. The first one is to preserve, maintain, and enhance the natural resources and natural systems in the county. Goal two is to encourage protection of farmland and forest land. The next goal is to ensure the protection of the natural functions and quality of the county's water resources. And then lastly, to maintain and improve air quality.
Does the county water resources mean like the inland bays, as we were had the inland bays people here earlier? Is that what that means, or does it mean groundwater, or does it mean something else?
All of it.
I think, yeah, when you're talking about county activity and how it would affect those different resources, then yes, it would include that.
It could be all of them.
Because I think throughout this whole plan, again, I hearken on the two things that are most important to Sussex County, the coastal areas and the inland bays, et cetera, and the ocean.
Those water resources.
And agriculture.
Yeah, so we're listing things. Them as surface waters, groundwaters, wetlands, and floodplains.
So I didn't know if it needs to be, you know, where we have protection of farmland, but ensure protection of the natural functions and quality of our county's inland bays and water resources or something of that nature. Just again, I think we ought to put it in there as much as we can to emphasize how important it is to this county.
Yeah, they are described in the text, but we can see if we can update the goal to be a little more specific.
I think it's important that we.
But I don't think we should limit it to inland bays, right? It's
well, no,
all waterways.
Right.
That's what you're saying there, right?
Well, I'd love to.
Broadkill.
Okay.
Waterways and water resources, whatever that entails.
Yeah, bays and waterways and.
Take care of Broadkill.
And the ocean.
So, Chris, when we first started this morning, of course, was talking about the need to improve the water quality, right? By. Mechanisms he had shared. So that first 5.1, I mean, what's the difference between enhance and then 5.4 where it says improve? What's the difference between those two words, if you would, in reference to this?
I think it's semantics. Enhancing or improving, in my mind, can be applied similarly in your approach. It just depends on what you're trying to accomplish.
To his point, he was suggesting that we, you know, improve. I'm just wondering, should we change that word enhance to improve so it's very, very clear?
Well,
or not? I mean, I'm just wondering.
I look at enhancing as being something that makes it better. Improving water quality is really a standard that people apply when they talk about air quality and water quality. It's like one or the other. You're making it better or you're making it worse. So improvements in those kinds of conservation areas is not inconsistent with the way it's being described elsewhere, if that makes any sense. I mean, we can enhance a viewshed of an area that's a natural area through different techniques. But you're either improving air quality or you're not, is kind of the way I look at it.
Okay.
Again, it's semantics. All right, so getting into the objectives for the first goal. The first one talks about encouraging development practices and regulations that support natural resource protection. Talking about protecting areas determined to be environmentally sensitive by directing development and growth away from those areas. Coordinating with government agencies and non-governmental organizations to identify and protect natural resources and habitat. Exploring new funding mechanisms for conservation in the county. And promoting education of citizens and elected officials of the county regarding the need to protect and preserve natural resources.
That's directed at you, Sam.
Do we have any comments, thoughts, questions about the objectives for 5.1? All right, 5.2, the encourage protection of farmland and forest land, we talk about recognizing and promoting the conservation benefits of having land in agriculture and forestry and pursuing opportunities to increase the financial viability of the agriculture and forestry industries. You all right with those?
Looks good.
We're good.
5.3, ensure the protection of natural functions and quality of the county's water resources. We have five objectives for this. This is protect water, surface water, and drinking water quality. maximize the performance of wastewater management to protect water quality, promote techniques and activities that protect and enhance water quality, better manage stormwater runoff to preserve water quality, and reducing flooding and erosion.
Does any one of them address the natural drainage areas that we see on the maps? The infiltration.
Recharge areas.
Well,
the surface water and drinking water quality would fall under recharge areas, right? I mean, that's how we get the groundwater, which is what we drink.
So there is an incentive under Objective 5.3.1. It's a strategy. 5.3.1.6 is to determine if a review of the existing county's wellhead protection ordinance is needed.
So.
And that is a carryover from the OA plan.
But wellhead protection is different than
water recharge areas.
So
we can consider adding that.
Mm-hmm.
And drinking water doesn't even come close to surface water. Reason I can say that because it hasn't rained in at least a couple months. Here in my area, we're probably spraying somewhere around 5 million gallons of water a day, and putting that irrigating this much water. At least for weeks. Where's all the water coming from? It's coming actually as far as here in New York. It's in layers of water. So they think recharge water runs right straight down. Actually, we got to put the clay around the wells in order to not let the water run back down around the well, where you can put the water back in again.
Right.
So when I say drinking water comes from surface water, they're way off base.
I don't think they're saying that. Water table and your wellheads, you know, kind of get into those aquifers
I like
and reservoirs.
I think it's all right.
Okay.
Good.
All right, thank you.
Sam's good with it. We're good with it.
Well, 5.4, maintain and improve air quality. The objective for this is working with federal and state agencies and non-governmental agencies to identify opportunities to improve air quality in the county.
We have to work with them. They make us. They mandate it.
That's what those federal guys are.
Yeah. Let's strike that one.
We're good.
All right.
You won't say we didn't need that.
Moving right along.
Hey, you know what George said about this? We don't have this to the state, or don't have this to the federal government. Shh. Please.
So getting back to our first objective, 5.1.1, to encourage development practices and regulations that support natural resource protection. The strategy for this is consider revisiting code to determine if modifications are needed to open space requirements, or if incentives can be developed to promote less fragmentation of open space. This strategy is consistent with the strategy that's in the future land use element at 4.3.2.4. The second strategy here describes establishing future public sewer service areas that will help preserve open space for promoting orderly growth rather than unplanned sprawl. Now, we just talked about this a little bit. Is there a suggestion that maybe we change or strike this?
Well, it doesn't.
Well, didn't somebody say that Hans said?
Yeah, I think you should strike it because the two of them are unrelated, sewer and open space. And can we go back to 5.1.1.1? Why does it have to say consider revisiting the code? Why can't it just say revisit the code? And you can always revisit and decide it doesn't need any changes.
I think everything was either consider something.
Evaluate
or.
I don't disagree with that.
Carried it forward. So
yeah,
but I agree. We could take that word out.
I think this is one of the key strategies that the council wants to address in this chapter. So as strong as you're willing to make it, I think it needs to be amended.
Why don't you go ahead and then just strike the word consider and just say revisit.
Revisit.
Yeah. And strike 5.1.1.2.
Okay.
Well, on 5.1.2 is that with sewer, you then can cluster, right? You have to have sewer to cluster.
Yes.
Yeah, right? Well, not necessarily, but to really get the cluster where it's a small lot size, you do. Yeah.
And which creates open space. I don't know if that relates to anything, but I mean, it can fall in the cluster.
Yeah, no, that's true, but it just seems to me that that's so indirect to
and
what
this
that
is looking
says.
At larger.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. This is looking at larger areas where that cluster ordinance is looking at, you know, site specific type things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is my guess, but we're striking that,
and we're gonna make revisit ED, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And could I just ask Vince? We take strategy 1111. How do we write an ordinance on that? Would you just run us through it? What would you do? I mean, what would the staff do?
Regarding open space?
This is a high priority. What would you take from that, or the staff take from that, to develop a draft ordinance?
So that what we'd probably do is come up with a list of things for you all to consider, and what the code says now is that's in the code now, so it'd be amendments to what the code says. So you would look at that, and the staff would say, all right, well, here's what our code says now. Here's a way to improve what is considered open space. That's one thing. We would look at, in each of the zoning districts, is there a mandatory do you want a mandatory percentage of open space in residential developments, whether it's 10%, 20%, 30%, whatever, because that's not there now in most places. You would say, like, how do you calculate open space? Is it contiguous versus scattered parcel open space, which I think you all were talking about?
Right.
You know, things like that.
Okay, and then the staff would put together a draft?
But yeah, after we get feedback from you, what you all want, and then
when do we ever get feedback, say, from a public hearing after we've put it all together?
Yeah.
Then you have the public hearing. Because would this council have the ability to say we'd like to have some experts come in from whatever agency to?
Sure. Oh yeah, absolutely. You could do that. Yeah.
Because once sometimes the things get in the draft, it's hard to go back and start unwinding or unringing the bell type thing.
And you could even do that before the draft is, if you have questions and just for consideration,
okay, just
we can always reach out.
Okay. And how will we know which ones are of high priority in the minds of the staff that are not? Could they be highlighted?
Well, I think, that's what we're going to do, is once we get through revising all the goals and objectives of strategy, you know, for the whole plan.
Like a top 10?
Yeah, I think what we'd do is get, a listing of them, which is, and then prioritize with we might make recommendations based on.
Well, yeah.
We've heard all the discussions from you and the commission, so we've got an idea of what's sort of important by what's gotten the most attention.
All right.
And then come back to you all and ask to prioritize it.
I just wanted to see where it was going. Okay, good enough. All right, Jeff.
Okay.
Good enough.
Continuing with 5.1.1. Strategy 3 talks about reevaluate use of 20-foot landscape buffers between new developments and adjacent uses to determine if buffer size is adequate/reasonable. This is in the future land use element as 4.4.1.1 for review.
Because 20 is what we have currently, right?
Correct.
Right.
We had talked last week if we wanted to update this. Are we just going to continue tabling this for now?
No, it's right there, right? We're going to reevaluate it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Strategy 4. Evaluate the county density bonus program to determine, and this is where we changed it, ways to encourage the use of the program. This would make it consistent with the future land use chapter. As well as recreation.
Do it on the western side of the county.
Good.
We were striking strategy 5, so it would be consistent with us striking it from the land use chapter. And then strategy 6 talks about continuing development of county code revisions, such as the revisions that addressed drainage through a county working group, tasked with accommodating state regulatory changes when appropriate.
Why did we strike 5.1.1.5 because it's somewhere else? Is that what you're saying?
I think when we were discussing it the last time do we need to consider the expansion or do we just need to evaluate the density bonus program? So I think...
Like redundant, I guess.
It was...
Yeah.
It was,
so
if we're going to
take
5.1.3.
Strategy 4 talks about evaluating the density bonus program.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
in other words, yeah, we're not saying that you're not going to consider expansion. We're just saying that comes under the umbrella of the other one.
Okay. They can just be combined together.
Okay.
Get Kramer on that working group.
Dear Lord.
I really have some heartburn over that strategy. I think it's pretty wide. Number 6, I guess it is. Because it's so wide open. I think it really comes down to whether the council feels as though a county working group is needed when a situation arises that we should address. I mean, the last drainage group was a function or a feature from this council to go out and tackle that issue, and that's what we did. And that just came up because we wanted to address that revision.
Well,
I don't know that we need to. I don't know that we need a strategy.
First of all, Conservation District does deal with drainage in this county, correct?
Well, besides drainage, they're using our update on drainage as an example of how to. It was viewed upon as such a good example of getting a working group together, updating the code that makes sense. It was a success. I don't think you need a strategy in our comp plan to use that model in the future if something comes up. That's all I'm saying. I don't know that we need it.
It's typical of a way to address problems.
If you turn to us right now and said, staff, figure out a way to do buffer and come up with a working group to do it,
we'd do it.
If you don't, I'm always looking to reduce this comp plan. It's too big as it is already. We don't need something we already know in the comp plan.
Yeah, I mean, we would
not that it's not important. It's just, you know, condensing.
Well said.
Okay, we're striking.
So we're going to strike.
All right, we're striking strategy 6.
Yep.
Objective 2 refers to protect areas determined to be environmentally sensitive by directing development and growth away from these areas. We have a few strategies for this. The first one talks about considering development of incentives to direct growth to growth areas as defined in the land use plan, and that will result in conservation of natural areas. This is similar to strategy 4.1.1.2 in the future land use element. The next, talking about review the appropriate sections of the Sussex County Zoning and Land Subdivision Codes to determine if amendments are needed that will better help protect critical wildlife habitat.
John, on protecting the first thing, where it just says protect areas determined to be environmentally sensitive. We don't have any list of what's already been determined to be environmentally sensitive anywhere that I know of. So we're starting without any areas that have been determined to be environmentally sensitive. So how do we do that if we don't know what these are? Do we wait till somebody tells us, like the developer or the applicant who's standing there at the podium? Where do I get and find that protect areas determined by who to be environmentally sensitive?
By directive.
How would we go with that?
Is where the buffer conversation comes in, right? This is determined. Somewhere in the considered development of the of incentives to direct growth to growth areas that will result in the conservation of natural areas. Well, natural areas is what we're trying to preserve, which would be the buffers, right?
It could actually take many different forms. It could be the wooded area, it could be the buffers, it could be the wetlands, it could be the water bodies.
But all of those are environmentally sensitive, is what you're alluding to. But George says we don't have a definition, and I agree with George. Well, there is no definition.
I don't think we've ever come up with a list that says this is what we consider environmentally sensitive.
Our planning and zoning director, as an application's in front of us, determine what's environmentally sensitive? No.
No, we would look at items.
No, I'm saying, that's what I say. So
now you want to hire a county scientist?
No. I'm just, Mike, it's up there. It says that that's going to be one of our objectives and strategies to protect areas determined. Okay, who's determined what?
About soil conservation.
Okay. So, I mean, you got, like, for instance, we use the Great Swamp. Now, I've determined that to be environmentally sensitive. As anybody else.
And you get ready to build, George, you got to go to soil conservation. They'll tell you what.
Vince, I mean, how did planning and zoning, I mean, what do you think?
Into what you want.
George, not you, Vince.
I don't know that we got into a discussion of environmentally sensitive. Is that that was just sort of a descriptive term, you know, it would include, like Janelle said, wetlands or whatever, you know.
No, I like the idea,
rivers,
but I'm...
Rivers, streams, whatever.
You're concerned that it says it's already been determined and
yeah.
We haven't actually determined
nobody
it.
Nobody has. Yeah. Nobody, or there's no map that says these are areas that are environmentally sensitive so that I know, or somebody sitting here knows, that we need to be directing growth away from that area.
We could change the language that says protect environmentally sensitive
right.
areas by directing development and growth away from those areas and take away the word determined.
I'd love to see some determined somebody determine some areas, but I'm just saying currently we don't have that, so how do we...
Are you done yet, George?
You go ahead, Sam. I can't wait to hear it.
Mr. Wilson.
Well, that's why I believe George turned us over to soil conservation some time ago, at least a year ago. And I think soil conservation is very capable of knowing how to direct people if they've got the right kind of land to build on or not build on. And I think that's already been answered. I think soil conservation is doing the directing here. I think it's the answer. Soil conservation
okay.
is good. Taken care of.
Good point. We'll take it.
Burton,
I'll note that.
5131, right? Review the appropriate sections of the Sussex County Zoning and Subdivision Codes to determine if amendments are needed that will better help protect critical wildlife. Why is it only critical wildlife, right? Why isn't it?
All wildlife?
No, forget
like what, I mean, habitat or natural resources.
Natural resources, right? Water quality. I mean, I don't know why we're looking at the subdivision code to protect the wildlife when we're not looking at the subdivision code to protect the watersheds, the trees, the you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why we're homing in on wildlife
critical.
Habitat.
And again, what's critical?
Right.
Who's
determining that?
The box turtle.
Well, I don't.
I think somebody else, Michael.
I think wildlife ought to be included, but it ought to be also include the water, the streams. I mean, that's kind of where the buffers come into,
so
right?
To protect natural areas?
Natural areas. Oh, yeah. Scenic views. I mean, you could. There's a lot of stuff that could go in there.
So
and
if we go back.
Honing it into wildlife.
Good point.
Lost my answer on page, didn't it?
Let's see.
I think we jumped pages.
It's on.
No time. We're losing time. We got to jump pages.
We had talked about subdivision.
Put that back up on the screen.
Wildlife.
They were just talking about the wildlife.
Who's controlling it?
I don't know.
I am. I'm trying to.
He was going back to find another strategy.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about where we.
I'm trying to relate subdivision codes to this
right,
strategy.
Right, I understand, Mr. Burton.
Here we go.
There was mention of updating subdivision and development codes before for open space. And I want to make sure that when we put these strategies in here, it's because they relate back to a specific objective or goal. In this case, we were looking at environmentally sensitive areas, so it could include critical wildlife habitat. We could broaden that a little bit, but I just want to make sure that if this change is made, how it would affect where we're also saying changing subdivision and zoning codes for other kinds of protection. That's all. So we can go back and make sure that things are consistent.
Well, I don't like the word critical because what I think is critical, Mike maybe not think critical, or an applicant says, we say we want to protect this because we think it's critical habitat, and he'll say, no, it's not. Show me, you know, prove. Where's any evidence in the testimony written or whatever that states that this is critical? So let's just say wildlife habitat.
Why are we homing in on just wildlife?
Well, I still agree with that, but I'd like to get rid of.
I want it in there. I just want.
You live in Dewey Beach. You live in Dewey Beach. That's why.
So you want like natural areas, including but not limited wildlife habitat.
I'm his representative.
I don't even know why. Why does it have to say wildlife habitat at all? You know, because natural areas would protect
include wildlife
habitat. And to me, environmentally sensitive, that has to do with what's occurring, how land is used, whether it's developed or not. Wildlife is a different category, it seems like. That's why I think it should be natural resources.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with changing the last three words.
Yeah.
It's just I wanted to see where else we were talking about changing our zoning and subdivision codes. Okay. So what we can do is we could make it something more generic like natural areas, and we can provide you with updated language for the next meeting.
Why?
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
I'll tell you why wildlife is so critical, because we got deer that weighs 300 pounds. We'll run out of this woods and jump in there and hits a car, and even in the past even killed children.
Mm.
Happened out here on 113 one time. So I say wildlife is pretty important.
I want it.
I would call that critical, wouldn't you, Mr. Burton?
I would, but I'm not saying.
He
I'm
wants
saying
to include
things
except wildlife.
I just want to put a comma, and then.
Oh, we want to be worried about other things except just wildlife.
I think we get
some sides deer.
You got it right. We can do that. We can leave the language and add to it.
This
so.
Is an inclusive and sensitive council.
That's correct, John. I think you got the idea of what we're talking about.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, because you're going to love the next objective.
You better keep moving or right. more money.
Objective 5.1.4, coordinate with government agencies and non-governmental organizations to identify and protect natural resources and habitat. The strategy for this is to continue working with the state to identify opportunities for the state to acquire additional lands in the county designated as natural areas, and continue working with the Sussex County Land Trust to use funds collected from developers and funds leveraged from other sources to preserve more land and open space through conservation easements and fee simple acquisitions.
We're good.
Of course, you can always sell more cars.
Mm-hmm. Strategy 3, work with DENRAC, Delaware Department of Agriculture, the Sussex County Land Trust, and nonprofits to continue adding appropriate properties to the inventory of protected lands in Sussex County, particularly to link together existing state-owned forests and existing open space. 4 says, consider methods to formulate stronger yet locally acceptable strategies for better protecting groundwater, waterways, sensitive habitat areas, and other critical natural lands in Sussex County. Might be able to use some of that language at the end there for your previous slide, Mr. Burton.
And the link together the existing state-owned forestries, that's, I call it the Dennis Forney green ring, right? Mm-hmm. So that. Is that kind of where we're going with that? I mean, should we further...
With the Dennis Forney plan?
Yeah.
Where he's trying to link stuff? Yeah.
Yeah. I just wonder if we should expand on that, or if linked together existing state-owned forestry catches it. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
It was discussed at Planning Commission.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that...
They had a presentation,
Do you think that language catches what he...
Link together those existing state-owned forests? I think it does.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it does.
All right.
I would note the term yet locally acceptable in strategy 4.4. Any history there? Why?
What's that mean?
Locally, I mean.
You mean in Ocean View?
It seems like a method to water down that strategy. I don't know that it's necessary. I don't know why it's there. You're either going to formulate a method or you're not, depending on what you formulate.
I agree. I'd strike that.
Okay.
And I'd also, again, I'm pointing to the word critical. I just think that we ought to just sensitive habitat areas and other natural lands.
I agree with that. I think critical is in the eye of the beholder.
Somebody's going to be arguing the word critical.
Okay, we'll make the change.
And that may be something I know Mr. Lawson and I were talking about. When we get the final version of these, we'll go through and look for words like that, mm-hmm. you know, that just raise red flags to that point, Mr. Cole.
Yeah, I mean, how can
like
you
beauty.
Like what?
Beauty. It's in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah, you're a good-looking man.
Shoot, okay, let's move right along here.
I thought you had the glass on.
How much longer are you going to be here, you think? We're about 12 o'clock, so.
We could take a pause here. This is a good point.
That's a good point?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a pause and
make a motion to recess.
Go to lunch. We're back at 12.